What's up, everybody? It's Mr. James O'Neill here, keynote speaker and owner of Mastery for All, where we partner with school districts across the country to ensure that all are mastering mathematics by highlighting the brilliance of our Black boys, because if we can get them, we have all. Our motto here is Mastery for All, empowered by Equity for All through the belief of expectations for who? For all, y'all. And if I'm saying y'all, you already know where I'm hailing from, the South, by way of the Queen City, Charlotte, North Carolina. And I am super excited that you decided to join me. So welcome to season 3 of the Mastery for All podcast with myself. I'm excited because in this season, I'm coming hot and heavy with this question. Is math a racist subject? Now, I know some of you all are wondering about the title, so let me give you a little bit of background. A while ago, I was on LinkedIn and I saw an article asking the question, is math a racist subject? After reading that article, I was inspired to bring this subject to the space of my podcast and wanted to answer the same question with the brilliant minds I have met in the math education space dedicated to the mission of Mastery for All. How can we teach math more equitably? How can we give access to all of our students? These are the questions we're going to be asking in that question. So I want you to be open to the things that these brilliant minds have to say, these colleagues of mine. So is math a racist subject? Well, let's find out. I'll see you on the other side of this question. All right. Hey, everybody. This is Mr. James O'Neill with Mastery for All. And I am here with my friend Joe Lofstead. Joe, how are you doing today?
Doing great.
Good, good. I'm so glad you decided to join me today in the first installment of this podcast called Is Math a Racist Subject? And so I'm glad you are here. And I'm just glad you came through, and I'm so glad because this is the first one and this is my first one going through this. And so thank you for being a part, Joe.
Absolutely.
So just a little bit about Joe. I'm going to read Joe's bio just to let you know that I just don't have someone just up here just randomly choosing people out here. But Joe Lofstead is the founder and CEO of Lofstead Coaching. He supports school system leaders, principals, and teachers with deepening their understanding for math to ensure that all students have access to high quality instruction. Joe is passionate about empowering math educators in our rural communities after teaching and leading in Eastern North Carolina for a decade. So that's Joe. And again, thank you, Joe, for coming on.
Yeah, glad to be here.
And so one thing that I try to do, Joe, is when I come on the show, I like hearing my guests, their math story. And so because, you know, out here right now, there are a lot of people that's just like, either I'm a math person or I'm not a math person. And so just finding people that have fallen in love with this subject and really built a career, a life of just supporting people in math is always interesting to hear. And so my story kind of really started out in eighth grade when I had one teacher really look at me, a little Black boy in Belhaven, North Carolina. I know we're from Eastern North Carolina, so 252, you supported that area. And so I know all about that area growing up, grown and raised in that area. But I was in a little town called Belhaven and was born and raised there, and had the there was a group of gifted kids and there was a group of the rest of us. And so with the gifted program, they literally left the classroom it wasn't every day, but there are times where the gifted kids left the classroom and they did their gifted stuff. And I was sitting in the classroom like, I am an all A student. Like, I am on the honor roll all the time. Like, I don't understand how did this program work? How were they chosen? And it just happened that all those students were white students. And I had me and my best friend, Chester, who were Black, and we were scoring and even working together and sometimes tutoring and exchanging thoughts with our gifted friends. And we're just like, why aren't we in this program? But it was in eighth grade where Mrs. Simmons gave me a placement test. My eighth grade math teacher, she was the gifted Algebra 1 teacher at that time, gave Chester and I a placement test along with my friend Adam, who happened to be a white male, but gave us a test. We got into the class and my life changed forever. I Love math before then. I came in contact with that productive struggle of math, but that teacher's acknowledgement of who I was and my capability put me on track to change my trajectory forever. So that's just a little piece I've written. Spoken word. I've talked about Miss Simmons. Everybody knows Miss Simmons. They're just like, hey, does she know? I was like, yes, she know. We're Facebook friends. She knows all about her impact on my life. But just thinking about that, what is your math story? How did you get in love, fall in love with math? How did you get involved with math? What is it?
Yeah, so I actually fall into both buckets of like, I'm a math person, I'm not a math person, and then like now believing maybe the third bucket that we're all math people. So if there's three buckets, I feel like I fall into all three of them. So as a little kid in elementary school, I was the math kid. Like I understood math. I was quick at it. I understood how to solve problems quickly. And then I got moved towards middle school. And in middle school, that's where our school began to start tracking. And as you were sharing out your story, it made me reflect a little bit about mine and how I think I learned something or knew something subconsciously in middle school that I only am now able to articulate, that I recognized that there was power in being in accelerated math. Like I remember telling my teacher in sixth grade, I need to be in accelerated seventh grade math. And at the time, I don't think I really understood why. I just knew that I wanted to be in that math class because I was a math kid. And then moving towards high school, that's when I fell into the bucket of like, maybe I'm not a math person because it got hard. I never had to study for math. But then in high school, I failed my first math test.
Yeah.
Because I didn't know how to persist and go through productive struggle because it always came easy for me. And so my teacher said, you have to start studying. And so instead of trying that, I dropped out of the class because I didn't need to graduate. And then when I went to college, I found out that I needed to take calculus. I took calculus and that was my first time where I was productively struggling with math and like reframe this mindset of like, I wasn't predisposed to be a math person. I can do math and we all can do math if we work really hard and we start to see the patterns that connect the whole math story. And so that's why I'm in this third bucket now of, I believe that we all can become math people or we all are math people. It just involves this productive struggle that I think that there's a misnomer that math is only for people that get it right away.
I was writing down some notes and looking at some of the parallels between your story and just, I mean, these are just brief snapshots into our life. And one of the things that you talked about is the power of accelerated math. Like you realized like there's power in this whole acceleration thing. And I think for myself, as I was sitting in the class and watching the gifted kids leave, I just felt powerless. I'm like, they're getting something that I'm not getting and it's accelerating them. And one of the things that I sometimes share is the fact that when the gifted kids left, they literally had pre-algebra the year before, which was seventh grade. And then they went into algebra in eighth grade. I had none of that foundation. So you talk about productive struggle. Jumping from eighth grade or seventh grade math into algebra one, it was definitely what I felt when you talked about that. And we're going to get into that today because I want to hear how you persevered from, you know, because when you're younger, you're just like, oh, I can get it. I get it. Everybody loves getting it. Right. And so when you first get into this thing, like, I don't understand and I'm not used to not understanding, like, I'm going to ask it now when I had it later on, but how did you get over that? Like, how did you get over? Because we fall in love with it because we're like, I got it. And then when we don't get it, just like, I don't think this is for me. How did you persevere past that?
I think it's still something that is a journey. Mm-hmm. I think in spaces and places where I feel safe, I'm extremely willing to continue to productively struggle and try. But in places that like I feel like either is not safe or people just expect, like they fall back into, Joe, you're the math person, you should get it. And then I start to get that imposter syndrome of, oh, I am the math person. I'm supposed to be, quote unquote, the expert, and I'm getting confused by the math. Maybe I'm not a math person. Then I go through that cycle again. I'm like, oh no, like we're all math people. We're all allowed to make mistakes. We're all allowed to struggle. We're all allowed to like ask questions or like, I understood this concept yesterday or 2 days ago, but now I don't understand it as fluently. Why is that? And just becoming a bit more curious about my process versus solely focused on getting the right answer or feeling like I have to get it within a certain amount of time. And if I don't get it within a certain amount of time, like then my intelligence is like in question.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that because that's real. And it is one of the contents where you feel like I'm good, but I'm not. It's like this relationship back and forth. And what you said is something that I'm not going to get into now, but it's so good, Joe. When you talked about safety, like that so resonated with me because I used to be threatened by teachers, been a middle school math teacher for many years. When I got into high school settings, I was just like, I'm not as smart as them. Like this whole imposter syndrome and forgetting that they know the math because they've seen the math and they went through their productive struggle with the math as well. And so, yeah, we're going to come back to that safety thing because it's a part of something that I want to talk about. And so I have the questions that I have here that I want us to get through. If we get through them, we do, we don't. It's going to be a great conversation already because you're spitting the fire already, Joe. So it's already good. So the first thing that I really want to get into is the reason why I started this podcast. I was actually reading an article on LinkedIn and they were saying, is math racist? And so this notion, and I'm not going to talk about the article because I really don't want to lead into whatever you feel about that. But my first question really is math a racist subject?
So my first thoughts on that is that I think a lot of folks get their feelings hurt when they hear the word racist. And they quickly, particularly white folks, think that, oh, the word racist was used. And they instantly go to this binary thought, I'm good or I'm a bad person, versus thinking about like that this is about structures and systems. And so if I'm thinking about structures and systems, math is a racist subject. As we both think about our two stories, math, at least in my school, was the first thing that starts to get tracked. And if you have access to the accelerated math program, then you are more likely, or it might be your only opportunity to also access the accelerated science, social studies, and English accelerated courses. Because if you don't start the accelerated track with math, then you don't have access to those other courses later on. And so if we're thinking about systems that track any sort of students, then that means that there is some inequality there. And so that's why, in my opinion, the subject of math is racist.
So inequality equates to haves and have nots, which then many times in this country leads to some sort of racism. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Got you. That's very interesting, Joe, because this is what I hear you saying is that the subject is a byproduct of the system that it's in. Not necessarily 1 + 1 = 2. That's racist. It is the system that we have put math in that again begins to separate people. And if you, like you said, if you have access to things beforehand, and sometimes that access can come in the form of a tutor, The access can come in the form of a parent that necessarily went through the school system who had support and maybe more fluent. And so that access gives you that ability to, again, separate yourself. And one of the things that you did highlight that I hear and I often say, but you said it in a different way that I really liked it. When you think about this access early, then it also gives you access to the other accelerated programs or content that is coming usually later on when you get to high school, when you get into the AP, the honors classes, and you get to actually access those because you've accessed the math early. What are your thoughts of concerning the whole tracking thing? The good, the bad, the ugly, the indifferent. What are your thoughts?
I'm smiling because I have so many conflicting thoughts on this. Like, as a student, not focusing on all of the other structures and systems that are taking place, but as a student, being in like accelerated math or honors or AP classes, like I had a real sense of honor and I was really proud of myself for being in those spaces. But now as I look back on that, I think about some of the content that I was taught and I don't really know if I was taught anything more or I just was expected to do more. And so because I was expected to do more, I did, but I was also given like a reward for doing that. Like in my school, my GPA was weighted because I took those classes. And I think that happens in a lot of schools. I don't think it happens in all schools.
Yeah, yeah.
But because of that, because I was taking a more difficult class, my grade was weighted. And so then at times I wonder, like, was I actually learning more? Was I actually doing more difficult content? But now as I look back as an educator and think about the structures and systems, like I don't really believe that a tracking system is best for all students. I think about Dr. Aguirre's talk when we were in Las Vegas together, and she was talking about how there is no tracking, there's no segregation that historically has ever been equal and accessible to all. Like separate but equal has proven to not be separate and equal. And so by creating tracking systems, we're creating segregation as well in our schools.
Joe, you said a lot. Gosh, you said a lot, Joe. Woo, it was so good. It's just like, come on, masterclass. Like, and one thing that we you and I know each other because we work with Unbound Ed, worked through Unbound Ed. And so when we was in Vegas, yeah, I that is a great, great takeaway from that moment. One of the things, I don't know how many questions I'm going to get to, Joe, because stuff that you're saying is just stirring up so much. So I'm going to practice discipline because there are some things that I want to get through. But one of the things that you said, Joe, is that you highlighted this several times. I don't know if I was taught anything different. I was expected to do more. That is going down as a tweet, Joe, because I'm telling you right now that's real. And when you said it, so I don't take up too much airtime, but when you said it, I thought about the classes that I have in my school. So we have Math 1, Math 2, and it's accelerated. So students can take Math 1 one semester. This is middle school. So one semester, this is the highest level of math that we have. They can take Math 1. And then the next semester, they can take Math 2. It's not that those kids are doing, oh, all these projects, all this conceptual understanding, all these different things that really expands their mind and allow them to see the real world mathematics. It's just the fact they're expected to go through 1.5 lessons a day. And then they're expected to come back at the end of the day when everybody else have a 6-block enrichment class. They are expected to come back and learn some more math and expected to do their homework and to come back and be ready to move on the next day. So it's not that they are learning anything more in depth. They're just learning at an accelerated rate. And so when you said that, oh, it just, it hit me. That, and that's real, Joe. That's really real. And as I think about the next question, because one of the things that you do is really supporting school systems and leaders and principals and teachers with deepening their understanding of equity and mathematics. What has been your experience in making sure that all races master mathematics? You talked about the inequities. When we start tracking, many times people don't want to talk about race, but when you look at these tracks, you can be like, that class is that class because I can look at the race. Before I look at grades, before I look at anything, I can look at that class's race and it can tell me a lot of stuff about the class. So again, what's been your experience in making sure that all races master mathematics?
Yeah, so in the school that I supported most closely was in Eastern North Carolina and predominantly serving Black and Brown children. And like, the focus at our school was building the content knowledge of the teacher because many of our teachers were in their first 3 years of teaching. And so either their content knowledge was very minimal based on what they experienced during their undergrad years, or in some cases, their math content knowledge was what they learned when they were in school, because in North Carolina, you don't necessarily have to go through an education program to become a teacher. And so I had a lot of teachers that like didn't know the content. And because if they don't know the content, then they're more intentionally or unintentionally teaching kids math incorrectly. So that was one of the big focuses of the school that I was supporting, was that we built structures and systems to make sure that our teachers were studying and practicing, because, you know, if you and I are on a team together, I'd rather make a mathematical mistake in front of you and you give me feedback on it, because you're not going to leave with a misconception on that math. But if I make that mistake in front of a student and it's their first time learning that concept, it's going to be really, really difficult to unteach that misconception. And so during that planning process, we would think about all of the students. Now, because I worked with primary school, we have the luxury of that. We have 20 students that are in our class. We're not thinking about 100 students with different periods like we do in middle school and high school. So in our planning process, we're thinking about the 20 students that are in our class. And what are the questions that we're going to ask each of those students to ensure that they can access the content for that day? And then what we would do is we trade our papers or our lessons or in our study, like our studying materials for that lesson. And then we would analyze it. Someone else would analyze your work and then ask you questions like, why are you asking James this question? Do you notice that you're only asking factual questions to this group of students? Do you notice that none of the girls are being asked why questions? And so by having somebody else analyze their work, it helped to uncover some like unconscious biases that we have about either students' math abilities or the students that can and can't in our class.
That is so good. And like two of my takeaways from what you're saying, especially the last thing you said, just examining and sharing each work and thinking through why we're doing what we're doing. But again, that speaks back to safety, right? So
like
creating this safe space where I don't want to get it wrong in front of my kids. So it's safe. I'm safe with you. And to share my thinking as to who I'm going to ask and why I'm asking and thinking through that and not being judged by that, maybe judging, because this is the thing that sometimes gets us in trouble, judging our actions, but not judging the person. Like, let's make sure we bring judgment on the action. You know, we need to question why is that the case? But even in that action is going to speak back to your mindset, speak back to the things in your belief system. And hopefully in this safe space, we can elevate one another. Love it, love it, love it. And I love, because one of the things that you also said is the fact that when you think about the math that our kids in our Black and Brown communities, many of those teachers are not the veteran teachers. These are teachers that may have not, you know, research has shown that teachers serving those communities are beginning teachers, teachers that may not have content or degrees in the content. And so I love the way that you're reaching all by making sure that the teachers have content and they are content experts. And so thinking about that, why, I know you said it, but why is that so important, Joe? And why, and how does that really bring down these inequities that we see when it relates to math?
So coming from a primary school, I think that everybody talks about primary school. It's the foundation. It's the foundation. It's like, okay, let's start treating it that way. Let's start treating, like, reading is important. Like, I don't want anybody to have that takeaway that I don't think reading is important, but it's overly emphasized as the most important thing in particularly K-2. We need all of our students to learn how to read, absolutely. And it shouldn't be while sacrificing math conceptual understanding. And yeah, that is what so often happens. And when I went to school for early and primary education. I was one of 50 undergrads in the program, and everybody was excited to teach reading. Nobody wanted to teach math. And so in that program of 50 teachers, nobody wanted to teach math. What does that mean in K-2 where teachers aren't confident, don't love math, have bad math identities for themselves? What does that mean for the foundation of math? So our students are then going on to middle school, and you have two groups of students. You have the students that like love math because they've been good at it. They've been quick at computations, and their teacher has been praising them of like, yes, you got it, way to go. Mm-hmm. And then you got your student that like, I don't love math. Math is really hard. I learned some skills in kindergarten. I learned some skills in first grade, but like, they're just these discrete skills that I don't really know how they all connect. And so if we don't start treating primary education as the foundational blocks of math understanding, our students are going to continue to struggle in middle school and high school. Another story that I would hear a lot from teachers is like, well, I'm going to teach primary school because the math is easy.
Yeah. Yeah. Hear it all the time.
And the math is like simpler, less complex. But if we only teach it in a procedural way, then it is not setting students up to conceptually understand the more complex topics in middle school, in later elementary school. And yeah, so that's why I have so much focus on early math, because there's just so much foundation that's not being laid. And then we wonder why students are struggling in third and fourth and beyond.
Yeah, that's really good. Yeah, that is. I hear you. And the foundation of the ripple effect that, you know, and the one thing that I constantly hear that when you move up, middle school teachers are blaming elementary teachers, and then high school teachers are blaming middle school teachers, and then college professors are blaming the whole K-12 system. And it becomes this ripple effect that in the foundation, if we don't deal with this foundation, then we're going to continue to have inequities when it comes to teaching math. And so you talked about struggling students at the end of what you were saying. And so historically, Black males have just been the students that struggle the most with mathematics, struggle the most with K-12 education in general, right? I was actually at Unbound Ed one time and forgot which city we were in, but I was with Dr. Kim Megler, who I'm going to interview as well. But she said something in one of our facilitation times, and she said something to the participants. She said, data can be used to really destroy dreams, and it can be harmful. And when she said that, she talked about how as a Black man and a Black little boy, whenever anybody put up proficiency, I always know who was at the bottom. Black males. like historically, like if you're looking at the bottom dot, who's that bottom dot without you even seeing the legend or the key, it is historically Black male students. And so sometimes as a Black boy, I used to cringe because I'm just like, oh gosh, like, why are we always at the bottom? And then what I also, as an older man, got used to is realizing that it becomes an expectation. If you consistently see the same thing over and over and over and over and over and over again, you just expect this to happen. So to shut my mouth and to get to the question, Joe, because this is where it hits me different. What are your thoughts concerning the achievement of mathematics when it comes to our Black boys?
So I think a lot of it comes back to us as educators, because we have created a school system that is really meant for a certain type of student. And when any student doesn't fall into that pattern, they are pushed aside. They are not differentiated for their different brilliances that they bring to the classroom. And so what I see happening in elementary school is that Black boys are sent out of class. And because Black boys are not in class, how are they supposed to learn the content? And what I also believe and see is that the reasons that Black boys are sent out of class has far more to do with the teacher in the classroom and their range of skills to be able to support that student. And I don't have any data to back this up, so I apologize.
No,
but like one of my theories is that like there's some math identity or teachers being scared of math. And so when they are already at a stressful level of like, I'm teaching math, I don't fully understand this concept. And then this thing happens from a student, they're more likely to like punish, send out, like give a consequence to, because they're already at their heightened level because they don't necessarily feel safe teaching the content. And so because they're at the stressful level, they're more likely to make like rash decisions. And when they make rash decisions, then it doesn't hurt the teacher. It hurts the student and it hurts our Black boys. And so again, if our Black boys aren't in class in those foundational years, how are they supposed to know the content so that when they get to middle school, they're able to apply the concepts from the earlier years? I don't know if that's a fully baked answer, but like that's some of my thoughts on that.
That's good. And you may not have the research to back what you basically saying, but there's so much research to tell us that when we're anxious, when we're in our emotions, what do people tell us to do? Don't make those decisions then, because we are more prone and more apt to making bad ones because of the anxiety that we feel, because of the discomfort that we feel. And so people tell us to breathe. People tell us to step away from the situation because we do not make rash decisions when we are irrational. And so I've never heard that before, Joe. So that's good. That's new. And it just makes sense when you get your, when, you know, are you Dr. Joe yet?
Not yet.
That might be something to look into for real. Because like you said, when you first started off, like we have a creative system that for a certain type of student. And if you walk into a situation and you're already tense about what's happening, you are more prone. And I've seen it as a teacher, like I just flash back to certain lessons where I tell the kids, I've gotten so much better as far as control. Like, but when it was like, we're about to do little breakout little sections and little stations. That's the word I was looking for. Like, I tell the kids, like, listen, y'all, I'm anxious about this. I don't know how this is going to work. So I've learned to be honest with them. And I might be a little bit more on edge because this is my first time doing it. But I am more on edge when it's my first time doing it. And I'm not as comfortable with the fact that I've never seen this and I don't know how it's going to turn out. And I'm more prone to be like, to give out a consequence when something is interrupted. And so that's just such a great connection when I think about that. And Joe, you've been talking about mastery and teachers mastering content and making sure that is highlighted. But as you think more about it, why is mastery of mathematics in general, why is it important to life, to education? Why is it, if you can speak more to that, why is it important?
So I think it's important in so many, it's important in many ways. Like if I'm thinking about for life, well, I'll break it off into two buckets, like for education. And
I love
for
your
life.
Buckets, now, by the way, Joe. I love your
thank
buckets.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I am under the philosophy that we should learn for life, not for school, but I don't think that our world necessarily operates in that way yet.
Yeah.
And so if I'm thinking about learning math for life and mastery in that way, like there's so many just practical senses of like why we need to understand math, like understand percentages, understand like, my wife and I are looking into getting a new car as we expand our family and like trying to understand like, okay, what does this percentage mean with the interest rate? Like, why is it beneficial to negotiate a lower interest rate? What does it mean by like if we put down this much more money? Like, what does that change to our monthly bill? And so that's just like a practical like if we didn't understand percentages, and then we went into that car dealership and signed a financing agreement, like that has implications on our life. It determines what decisions for the next 5, 6, 7 years, however months you're financing, what decisions we can and cannot make because of that agreement that we've signed up for. And so that's like one practical reason why like math like plays out into our real life and mastering or recognizing that I don't understand something and I need to ask for help. Like, I understand percentages and I understand this financing agreement, so I don't need to ask for help. But like, if I wanted to go out for a business loan, I don't understand all the math that's associated with that. So I know I need to go out and find somebody who can help me answer those questions. But I also need to know what are the right questions to ask. And that takes place, I believe, in our K-12 math world, where I can learn how to ask great questions so I can make sure that I understand the math that I don't understand yet. So that's a real life application, like that would have impacts on me as a person and my family. Educationally, I think about like we've talked about like this, our educational system, like I believe that it is set up in a structure that I think I would like to dismantle, change up a little bit. But right now, like, we're not going to be able to change everything right now. We can't dismantle everything and just rebuild it all in one day. And so for our students, mastery is important because they still have to operate within this structure to be able to have access. And as they gain access and like operate in this system, they can support with dismantling it. But if they don't have access to those skills and concepts and accelerated programs, they're not going to necessarily have the access to be able to be part of dismantling the structure that as it currently exists.
You know, access has always been the cry for marginalized communities. And in this country in particular, and, you know, all around the world, when you think about that and not go back to the whole title of today's podcast, Is Math Racist? The institutions and everything that you're talking about dismantling, you're saying right now, we can't dismantle everything, but we can do our part in dismantling this part. And what I hear from you is that you recognize your gift. You recognize the call to dismantle the fact that I need to support teachers in this K-5 level to really understand why their foundational understanding and content knowledge helps dismantle the access that a lot of Black and Brown students do not have when it relates to math. And as it relates to education, because the way the system and the institution is built is that if you master this content, you get access to a lot early. And I call it the snowball effect whenever I do keynote instruction, and you pretty much keynote speaking. But when you just pretty much said that, like, you get access to this early, it opens up the gates of access a lot on life. And one of the things that I really love that you said, Joe, is the whole problem solving thing. Math teaches you how to problem solve. Mastering problem solving will allow you to master that in your life. I recently got into an accident just a week ago. Someone turned in front of me and totaled my car. And so I am literally going through the process of what am I about to do next? And I have a business and I've built my business and, you know, I'm full time now. And so I'm just like, okay, it makes more sense for me to lease a car under my business because of the write-offs that happens, and like problem solving, like, what do I wait on? Like, how do I wait? What is the percent? Researching, looking on YouTube, like, what do I go in as and asking, and what makes sense for me financially as well? And why would it make sense for me to lease as opposed to buying? And why would it go make sense for me to do this in my business as opposed to me personally? And so there's benefits and all, but I love the fact that you're saying math teaches us how to problem solve, because what I realize is that our kids, that is something that is a life skill.
Yep.
And that productive struggle through that really helps us in life.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so, like, when I think about that, and I move on to pretty much our last question. You talked about things that you would change concerning the system, but what specifically, when you're coaching teachers, when you're coaching leaders, what advice would you give to mathematics teachers, facilitators, leadership when it relates to math? What advice would you give? What advice do you give as it relates to really dismantling this idea of, there are some people that can and have access. There's some people that don't have access.
So I think one of the phrases that I might use too much, but process over product. I think that in our historically in math classes, what I've seen is we care about getting the right answer. And that's reinforced with state testing. So it's good. Reinforced by these high stakes tests that our students have to take at the end of the school year. And with our focus on process over product, we're caring about, like, what's the problem solving? What's the different ways that you can solve this problem? What's the thinking that you have? What is the misconception that you have about this problem? Or what is the way that you're solving this differently? What connections are you making to earlier mathematical concepts? What are connections that you're beginning to make that you as the student don't even realize that you're making yet? But I, as the teacher, now know, oh, you understand this. That's going to set you up for what's coming next. And I can ask you an even better question now that I understand your thinking. So process over product it feels like my hill to die on. Mm-hmm. I also feel like I have to keep saying it because that is something I'm rewriting for myself. Even during a session where somebody asks me a question and I'm like, okay, I need to give them the right answer because they asked me a math question. And I'm like, no, that's not the point. It's not the point. Like, how can we work? Like, my speed in getting them the answer is not the most important thing. And if we can, I believe that if we can really rewrite that mindset, like, it will have a huge impact on students and math classes.
Students who become grown-ups who become leaders, who become teachers, who become administrators, who become entrepreneurs, who become people in the world, right? It really can impact. I love that, Joe, because I know for a fact that as you rewrite that for yourself, that is something that in my last years in the classroom, which just happened to be like a month and some change ago, but rewriting that for myself and being in atmospheres and around people that talk about the process over the product. Because, Joe, to be honest with you, man, AI can get us the product now. Like, our world is changing. This is about to go on. It's about to be on and popping on another level, right? And so, like, seriously, like, there's stuff that even in my business, just I'm like, stuff that I would have done, just like, no, I'm letting the AI do that. Because at the end of the day, to me, it's not about that process. It's about that product. It's about getting that email out or getting that message out or getting that social media post out or whatever like that. But the process of me getting there, like I have to be able to ask the AI the questions that need to be asked, because I've gotten on there and I'm just like, you are not giving me what I'm asking you for. Like, and so it's just like, what do I need to ask? That's the process. What do I need to say to it? How do I need to build it out so it tracks my thinking? You know, that's process. And that's something that we don't, but we're going to have to, because our kids have access to product. Product, answer. It's no longer like, let's get the right answer. Why would I go get the right answer when they can give me the answer? What is the process that I'm learning that will relate to the right answer? All right, I'm shutting up, Joe, because that's hitting me. And it does hit me because I'm just like, after going full time, I realized that there was so much waste of time in education because it didn't translate to me doing what I'm doing now. Not saying that everything is going to translate to that, but that process, the process does translate in life. So I love what you lifted up. My last question, Joe, before I let you go, is this, when I think about your personal mission to advancing all students, if you were to sum that up in just a quick blurb, I'll ask two questions so you can have two buckets to put it in.
Oh, love buckets.
So what is your personal mission as it relates to advancing students, all students, when it relates to mathematics? And why is that your personal mission?
Yeah, so my personal mission is I want to support elementary school leaders, coaches, and teachers with building their content knowledge so that students have access to the on-ramps to grade level content. And particularly, I've been doing this in rural areas because people don't go to rural areas. Like the big groups that like the big companies, like they're not going to rural areas necessarily because like, as we live in this capitalist society, like you have to travel pretty far to get to each of the schools. So it's not like the best bang for your buck necessarily, but our students deserve it. And our students in our rural areas have been so historically marginalized and purposely left out of the equation. And I want to make sure that they have access to that grade level work so that they can make choice filled lives.
I am appreciative that people like you exist. Because like when I think about what you just said, I'm just like moved. I'm like, I want to go to rural areas too. I'm from one. I'm from the little 2,000 member town. And so it's just like when I hear you, I'm so inspired. And hopefully other people, I know they'll be inspired by your what and your why and how they marry together. I was a little James in the little town of Belhaven, and I needed someone to support me and support the teachers that saw me and to give me access. Thank God for Ms. Simmons, who pulled me out and put me on a track that totally revolutionized my life. I'm grateful for her, but I'm also grateful for people like you that really goes into the areas. Because one thing about these little small towns, like they run it. Like whatever they say, there's not a whole bunch of people looking over the shoulder. You know, that's not like this is what we do here. This is our town.
Right.
And what we
That's
say
right.
goes.
Everybody knows everybody.
Yep, exactly. And so like you coming in and just supporting that, it can be different. All right, Joe. So your answer to your question, going back to the beginning, is math racist? Joe says, yes, it is. Because of these systems and the way we present math in our society. So you're the first person to say yes, and I'm be tallying up the people that say yes and no and their reason why around it. Joe, I want to thank you so much for being on the podcast today. I appreciate your brilliance. I appreciate your heart. I appreciate you doing the work that needs to be done.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. This is Mr. James O'Neill with Mastery for All. This is the first episode of Is Math a Racist Subject? And I hope and I pray that you enjoy this episode. Go and have an amazing day.
Man, oh man, I hope, listen, you got everything you needed from this episode. And I also hope that you got some clarity as far as is math a racist subject and how we can do better with the teaching of mathematics. As you already know, I'm a speaker, coach, consultant, and PD/workshop provider. I would love to partner with you and your school, your district, or maybe even your organization as it relates to supporting the mastery of mathematics for all of our students. Feel free to reach out to me through email at info@MrJamesO'Neill, O'Neill is spelled O-N-E-A-L.com, or check out other resources at my website at MrJamesO'Neill.com. Follow me on Instagram or Facebook at Mr.JamesO'Neill or LinkedIn and Twitter at MrJamesO'Neill without any dot. Listen, I am super excited that you decided to join me. Today. Have an amazing day.